Hi, this is David. If you own a website like I do, you know how important website security is. It's always a nagging worry in the back of your mind that one of the millions of hackers out there might gain access to your site and destroy your hard work. But I've discovered a solution. With Kinsta, they take care of the technical and security stuff, so you can focus on what you do best, creating great content or selling great products. Kinsta provides managed hosting for WordPress, offering lightning-fast load times, top-tier security, and highly dedicated human-only customer support. They provide complete peace of mind by ensuring that your WordPress website is always online, rock-solid secure, and performing at its best. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit KINSTA.com to get this limited-time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today. Thank you. Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from the book Comfort by Hugh Black, published in 1910. The world is full of men and women who are carrying burdens of work or care or sorrow. And the burden often seems too heavy for them to bear. The sorest part of the trouble is that it appears meaningless, with no evident relation to life. The result is that there is only a dull bending of the neck for the load, or a listless doing of the duty. Should the burden seem inevitable, it would be something if we could see some useful purpose in it. The apparent aimlessness of pain is more disabling than the pain itself. Life loses its spring, and the world turns gray, when the eye has no larger vision. The greatest need of humanity is a message of good cheer, of heartening for the daily task. But this cannot come by mere well-wishing and the usual surface consolations, patching another's grief with proverbs. It can only be by seeing that the whole of life is reasonable and can be made to show some meaning. For great living, we need to believe in the worth of life. In the face of the almost appalling difficulties that confront faith, we are nevertheless driven to meet them to keep life sane. At the same time, we can hold our central faith in the worth of life without having a rounded theory to explain the universe. It is enough that we see cause to take heart of our blessings and to be strong and of good courage. So, the purpose of today's talk is not to give a speculative solution of the deep problem of pain, but to show a practical way by which a brave soul can gather courage and strength and comfort. It is to know the fruits which the tree of life can be made to bear. There is a way to peace of heart, and comfort of mind, and composure of soul. This is the gospel of comfort, needed not merely for those in sorrow, but for all who bend to the yoke of human life. Charles Reade begins his great novel, The Cloister and the Hearth, with the remark that not a day passes over the earth, but men and women of ordinary means do great deeds, speak great words, and suffer noble sorrows. Most of these people are moved by a deep instinct rather than by a rational purpose. But when the instinct fails, It needs to be reinforced by a purpose, such as that which comes from the region of faith. We are all, of course, affected by our time and by the prevalent mood of our age. There have been periods when it was easy to be an extreme optimist, when indeed it was difficult to be anything else. In our own age, pessimism is more than an affectation. A somber view of the world is natural today when people have been flooded with more knowledge than they are able to absorb, and when they are confused about moral issues, and when much of the traditional faith has been questioned. Sometimes this somber view appears as a cynical depreciation of humankind, a blind rage at the inequalities and wrongs of society, at the cruelties of history, at the dark mystery of human life. However, there is a point of view from which the existence of this evil is justified, even if it is not explained. It may be that what we call evil is a condition necessary to the fulfillment of human life. A cosmic process is not to be judged by our personal wishes, but by the end. And if we decide that growth is worthwhile, and if we see that obstruction and much that we call evil are conditions of growth, we will at least learn patience and be content to exercise faith. Of all the problems associated with the existence of evil, the problem of pain has become the most poignant. The modern world is perhaps not so sensitive to sin as people used to be, but it is much more sensitive to pain. There is a revolt against the conditions of human life. Sometimes it appears as a stony despair or a wild defiance. Sometimes it appears in the mood of a jaunty indifference or in the selfishness of one who tries not to care. In many cases, there is a willful shutting of the eyes to facts and the preaching of a shallow optimism. If we wink hard enough and fast enough, we can make believe that there is no ugly side to life and no abyss at the world's end. It is assumed in some pretentious faiths that if we assert loudly that there is no pain, there will be none. If we deny with sufficient energy that sorrow exists, it ceases to be. It is all so futile and such a petty mind game. For even if by that means we could save ourselves from many personal experience of the mystery of evil, we need only look back over history to be convinced that the whole of creation has groaned and travailed together in pain until now. We see bloodstains on the flinty track of the steep ascent where human feet have trod. And we need only look around us to see lives that seem made for dishonor, and many modern illustrations of the ancient problem that often the good suffer, and with a suffering from which the wicked are exempt. The world is a place of need, and of all the needs of the needy world, the greatest is that human hearts should find comfort. The word to comfort means more than to soothe and console. It means originally to strengthen, to fortify, to bring support and courage. And naturally enough, it has now been narrowed down to the special meaning of bringing solace and good cheer, to soothe someone in grief and trouble. To all must come sometime the breaking of the strongest ties, and all sometimes must be moved with pity for the pathos of life, and with a sense of the vanity of all earthly pursuits. The world is made barer and poorer when we feel that all loving interest in us and our doings and fortunes has gone out of life. What shadows we are, and what shadows we pursue, is the sad cry. In such a mood, we can ask if it is worthwhile being renewed in courage for the tasks of each day, and if any comfort could bring back again the old zest for life. What can brace us again for the conflict, and make us calmly accept duty and destiny? What can dignify life and make it appear inherently great? For often the trial is simply the smallness and monotony of our daily interests, the disheartening uniformity, the petty pace at which life creeps from day to day. The quarrel that many have with life is that it does not offer enough scope and does not measure up to reasonable expectations. Many people suffer the pain of maladjustment rather than any severe agony. They feel they have not the right environment. It is not so much a revolt against life as a revolt against their lot in life. Many wonder if it is worth going through with the prosaic duties, petty self-denials, obscure privations, and constant drudgery. Life itself has little to teach us if we are not willing to learn the meaning of our limitations. If our standard of value is a moral one, we must revise our judgment of what is great and what is small. We then will see that these petty trials and tantalizing privations may be made occasions for growth of the spirit and a graceful life. They become part of the divine appointment of our lives. These experiences may be to us not only means of God's education for us, but even sacraments of divine love. That is at least the religious answer, that there may be a blessing even in the dreary day, and some fruit to be gathered from the most untoward experience. When we believe that we are in the will of God, that is, a guiding force greater than ourselves, a situation ceases to be merely hard luck and becomes a heroic occasion. A disappointment changes from a grief into a glory when it is seen to be guided by providence. Everything depends on our essential view of life, and that in turn depends on our view of God. The spiritual life is not a matter of great and small. It becomes consistent and all of a single piece when it is seen in the light of faith. The only dignified alternative to faith in God as the source of comfort is the stoical attitude. The world can sometimes meet suffering with defiance or resignation. Can refuse to bend even though it must break, can speak of the unconquerable soul, even in the keenest pain or the deepest grief. The common Stoic advice is to bury sorrow in the presence of duty, and to brace oneself up for the stern realities of life. There is a great and blessed truth in this, that some comfort comes to the individual who turns from the thought of grief to daily duty, especially when duty is the fruit of faith, when every good work and word comes from a sense of God's presence. However, work itself does not bring happiness. Without it, happiness is impossible, but alone it brings weariness and a sense of futility. The writer of Ecclesiastes again and again speaks of its vanity. And, as a matter of fact, no wise person can be satisfied with their own work, to say nothing of its satisfying their life. The individual who looks complacently on what they do has a very meager standard of excellence. Even if it satisfied our needs of outward activity, there remains the whole region of our inward life. We need to feel that our work is worth doing, that it is accomplishing something, and that in following our line of duty, we are also in line with something bigger. We need to have our activities related to the larger life of the world, and faith alone does this. It turns work into duty, giving it a secure motive. It relates our life to God, and makes a sure and simple trust that neither the Creator nor the laws of nature will play us false. The twin secrets of happiness and peace are faith and duty. Simple faith in God, in divine love and justice, and simple duty whose motive is in that loving faith. Without faith in God and God's love and God's future for us and our loved ones, there cannot be for us any true and permanent comfort. Without it, we are open at every turn to any shock of chance and to every alarm of fate. But with such faith, we can lift up our burden with serenity and perform our tasks with peace and find joy in our work, looking upon it simply and sweetly as service. True faith expands for every fresh need, and when the need comes, the comfort comes also, and out of weakness we are made strong.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.